Look, some will come from far away, and look, some from the north and west, and some from the land of Sinim, the far east. So, in this version of the Bible translation of Isaiah 49, chapter 49, verse 12, which is my own translation, I include the words the far east for the land of Sinim, because we learned that Shinar and China are similar, and the fact that the Sinaitic languages, or this, yeah, we're gonna look that up, I think, in the article and see what we can bring back from that. But that's our scripture from the Bible for today, God's Word, Jehovah's Word, little children. And so we're on chapter 5, paragraph 6 of the Ark of Urartu. Before we begin, let's look up this word, Sinaitic. The Sinaitic or Sinitic language is the Chinese branch of Sino-Tibetan, and that's why I gave that translation, the Far East, for that verse, which other translations don't render. But it is true, though, in the New World Translation, in the footnote from the 1984 version, it says that Sinim is to the south, or in the Septuagint, it's the Persians. The Persians are definitely to the east of Israel. But if we look at the study, not the study, what am I saying here? For this verse, if we click on this, the reference section, we get the Insight Book reference to the entry for Sinim, the land of Sinim, or Sinim, or Sinim, however you pronounce it, a country from which it was foretold scattered Israelites would come when the time arrived for them to dwell in their homeland. Reference to the north and west in the same verse suggests that Sinim was south or east, right? So that's it. It mentions that there in the Insight Book also, just for a rather important reference, because it validates our translation as being the Far East, that it is the correct translation. Now, the date 2772 we mentioned earlier, right? In paragraph 3, chapter 3, paragraph 10, I should say, paragraph 310, we say that the beginning of the building of the Tower of Babel was 2772. Well, how did we get that? Well, because we could obtain that because Noah died 350 years after the deluge from the Bible. He was 600 years old at the time of the deluge, and he died 350 years after. So we take it as, in our chronology, I guess I better show that just to be thorough, but 3282 is the time of the deluge, subtract 350 years, is 2932 for the death of Noah. And they said in the book Sacred Annals, it was written, the events described at Genesis 11, I got this from the book Sacred Annals directly, that the events of Genesis 11, where they built the Tower of Babel, that's what that's referring to, it occurred about 100 years after the death of Noah, which would be 2932 minus 100, right, which is 2832. And if I want to check that to be sure, we better go and check just to be sure that Genesis 11 is talking about the Tower of Babel, and it is. It's talking about the building of the tower there making bricks to build the tower. In verse 3, it's talking about the tower in verse 4 of chapter 11 of Genesis. Okay, so that is the Tower of Babel, that chapter 11 of Genesis. Okay. But then it also says, Abu Faragi, this is also in chapter 3, paragraph 10 of the Ark of Urartu, the Armenian Abu Faragi, or Abu Faraj, Abu al-Faraj, Bar Hebraeus, those are his different names, but they all refer to him. This Armenian who studied local traditions in the area, he wrote that 60 years after their arrival on the plains of Shinar, which was about 100 years after the death of Noah, right? So there was another 60 years, he said. So let's subtract 60 again. Let's do another additional subtraction there. Another subtraction, we get to 2772. And so that date we had obtained in that paragraph 310 already in this article, right? The Ark of Urartu that we're studying right now. So then we subtracted the 43 years for the construction of the tower, and we got 2729. So the date 2729 we had already obtained earlier in our article as a possible date for the dispersion, right? That was one of the dates that we gave. In later articles, we talk about 2745 BCE as being the dispersion. But let's continue anyway. Let's continue on. We need to revisit these things sometimes and maybe review and reinstate or synergize, you know, or bring together all these different elements and see if we can come up with a better answer. Because that one looks like a very good explanation. Unfortunately, it was based on somebody else's work, right? We can't just trust the work of one person, like, or even anyone, even if it's a group of people, we can't trust their work as being accurate. I want to show you this drawing of what I didn't show, this picture from yesterday before we read our article today. Look at this. I just noticed that after I was talking to you, this 36,525 is the number of inches of the circumference of the base of the Great Pyramid of Egypt. Do you notice that? 365.25 is what that is, multiplied by 100. Is this number 36,525. And what is the number 365.25? It's actually the same as the number of days in a year in the Julian calendar, which came a long time after the Egyptians. It was developed by Julius Caesar, right? The Julian calendar, where an extra day was added every 4 years, called a leap year, when a leap day was added every 4 years into the calendar at the end of the month of February, right? We know that. We still do that in the Gregorian calendar, but we don't do it every 4 years. It changes. It's a bit different. Some of the centuries are different, right, because of the adjustment in the Gregorian calendar to make it more accurate. But basically every 4 years, there's an extra day added because the year is really 365.25 days long, and the Great Pyramid has that number 365.25 built right into it. I thought that was absolutely astounding to note that. Okay, that was something I possibly saw briefly somewhere else a long time ago, or years ago, I mean. Not a long time ago, maybe, but years ago I saw probably a mention of that somewhere, but I didn't really see it, I don't think, on that drawing before. So that's the perimeter, the circumference of the Great Pyramid. At its base is exactly that number, 100 times that number 365.25, and it's inches, 36,525 inches. So, paragraph 5-6 now, in Egyptian mythology, Thoth, or Thoth, you see that? His name Thoth is also, without the H's, the word Thoth, which means a young child, or it means schooled, or inculcated, or what's the word? Trained or taught, right? And this is the god of wisdom, time, writing, magic, and the moon. If you look up Wikipedia, Book of Thoth, that's where some of that comes from. But I haven't looked that up recently. They could have changed that by now. Who knows? He is called Danaus, Mercury, Hermes. In other words, Hermes. And this is really important, this similarity between Hermes and Hermes. And I'll tell you why later in this paragraph. Pluto, etc. Belus is the father of Danaus in Greek mythology. Really? I'd forgotten that. And thus, Mizraim, even though I prepared by reading this, and thus Mizraim, the father of Thoth. Yeah, Mizraim is the father of Thoth, too, right? I mean, that's really important, because Thoth was a real king, a real person in Egyptian history, and Mizraim was his father. They were both, you know, among the very early rulers or founders of the Egyptian royalty. Mizraim bears identification to Belus. The 62 years of Belus as of Menes, compare that to the 62 years of Menes. See, that confirms the identity between Belus and Mizraim. But it's very common, this confusion between different people. This people with many different names, and different people with the same name also. The same person with different names and different people with the same name happens, it seems, quite frequently in ancient history. Menes or Mizraim, now Belus. We're saying that he's now, we can call him Belus, is the famous Egyptian god of antiquity, whose other son was Osiris, also called Nimrod. So Thoth and Nimrod were brothers, is what that says, you see? That makes a lot of sense, because we know there's a legend about Thoth locking Nimrod in a box and then putting the box out to sea. That is reminiscent of the Noah's Ark, you know, the flood legend. But it's an Egyptian legend, and it's a very fascinating, it's an amazing legend, I think. But really, I think Thoth locks Osiris in the box, I think that's how it goes. But anyway, and so Osiris is also, we have identified Osiris, that is, as Noah, right? Because of that legend, and also because of, you know, the dating. When you look at the myth talks about the months in which these things happened, right? Hathor 18, I think. Or Hathor 17 or 18, whatever it was, it corresponded really well to the Bible's account, where it mentioned the 17th of the month or the 18th. So, I mean, talking about the deluge in the Bible. Excuse me. Okay. Anyway, yeah, I'm just reminded of that now, but we need to get, I mean, I just love reading about this stuff, because it brings back, it's like all of this stuff is just alive and dancing around. they're real ancestors that are just waiting to be learned. It's like they're crying out to learn more about us. That's what I feel about these ancient ancestors that we have, or even just people who are, they may not even be our ancestors, many of them, but they're still people who are important in our history. Many of them are. So it's so, there's such an urgent cry that I'm hearing from the past that's telling me to research this, offering a very ancient explanation for, Ninus, the son of Belus, is here seen also, because remember there was a Ninus that they said was the son of Belus in the Assyrian chronology, right? Because Belus was this king who ruled for some 55 years or something, and his son, they said, was Ninus, but then other people said, no, he wasn't his son, he was just, well, we found out later that he could have just been the son-in-law, because that's what Gudea was. I think we found that out, that he was the son-in-law of somebody who was very important, like one of the kings of Assyria who had preceded, he wasn't from the Assyrian nation, he was probably one of the kings of Akkad or somebody. But we don't know the identification of these people when we read these names in ancient languages that are not the language that we are used to seeing. You know, I mean, there are different languages all over the ancient lands, and so we don't know for sure whether we've identified particular individuals correctly. But Gudea was the son-in-law of somebody important, and I think we correctly identified Gudea as Chedorlaomer, who was Ninus, and he was not the son of this important person, but he was the son-in-law. So that would fit really well with the contradiction that some people say that Ninus is the son of Belus, other people say no, he's not. Well, he's the son-in-law, that would fit, right? He's the successor, or the son-in-law. He's like the son, and in fact, he's the grandson. If he's Naram Sin, he's the grandson of Sargon, if we identify Ninus as Naram Sin. So he's similar to being a son in that way also, but he's not the immediate successor. That's the other thing. He wasn't the immediate successor of this important king, because Naram Sin was not the immediate successor of his grandfather. There were two kings, his uncles or father and his uncles or something, who preceded him. Two of his relatives preceded him. And Ninus is also seen as Nimrod's name. You know, I mean, there's so much confusion in the names. We shouldn't get too hung up on the names. We just want to think about the individuals, if we can. And so because there's a way of seeing Ninus as Nimrod's name, that offers a very ancient explanation for why some said this Ninus was the son of Belus, and others disagreed with this assertion, while all the while they spoke of another king. He was a king of some kind. Ninus was a king. In fact, we believe Ninus was the first king of the Assyrian Empire, right? And we can identify him as Gudea, and it fits perfectly in time with Gudea having begun the Assyrian Empire immediately following the dynasty of Akkad. And that seems to be only true in our chronology, or in chronologies that are similar to ours, because nobody else would make that, or has, nobody else has identified Gudea as Ninus, first of all, because of the differences in the names and the fact they couldn't identify Ninus as Chedorlaomer of the Bible. But we did. I want to just keep on talking about all the great discoveries that we seemingly have made here, because I believe they are true, but we have to keep reading here. A direct application of the Greek mythology makes Poseidon posit to be Cush, Cronus to be Ham, and Uranus to be Noah. There was a wonderful, phenomenal, I'm sure it was a bright insight that I had right there at the time, but it got lost because, as I wrote right afterwards, I said, nothing like this article has ever been undertaken before, and consequently, discoveries are being made on the fly. I was making discoveries left, right, center, everywhere. Like, I just discovered new things all over the place. And not all of them were worth researching at the time because I was busy, right? So much so, I said, so that I have no time to consider these until later. There are also, of course, alternate chronologies, but may it suffice to say that none of these compares to our best. So there are also, of course, alternate chronologies, not just alternate identifications of people. There are also alternate timelines or, you know, chronological, you know, alignments or completely different chronologies, but none of those, they just didn't give us any better explanation. None of them did. So we do well to avoid, in fact, none of them even came close to the genealogy. I'm being honest, it was just, there was nothing as good as that even. And it took a lot of discipline to say, well, because the genealogy isn't perfect, right? I mean, or it seems far from perfect. So it took a lot of discipline to say, well, even if it's got weaknesses or flaws or things that don't look as good as some of the other chronologies might look, it's better overall by far. But it took a lot of discipline to stick with the timeline that we had. We do well to avoid missing identifications of ancient and obscure people. Right? That was the thing. We were trying, I think that was the priority. We didn't want to avoid, I mean, we did want to avoid, but we didn't want to miss identifications. Right? We wanted to avoid missing the identifications of ancient and obscure people who might be actually important people, but they were obscure. And you could just forget about worrying about misidentifications. Forget about trying to avoid misidentifications, because that was guaranteed to happen. I mean, you didn't even think about that, because, I mean, whether it happened or not, you know, if you were worried about misidentifying people, you'd never do anything, because everybody back thousands of years ago is very obscure, right? So you couldn't worry about misidentifying people. Well, the allergies are very much less than what they were, but I haven't even been running my HEPA filter recently. But I guess I'm getting a little bit of a runny nose. I'll have to turn on the filter again. Comparison to the Chinese Emperor Shennong, 2737 to 2699 BCE, held to as Nimrod's opponent, Shelah. From the Bible, we consider Nimrod the great hunter, and that Shelah, the descendant of Shem, was the opponent of Nimrod's, who was Shennong, who was the opponent in Chinese history of Chi Yu, whom we identified as Nimrod, right? So Shennong and Chi Yu, it correlate to Shelah and Nimrod. In time, the Chinese emperor or the comparison of the Chinese emperor Shennong to Shelah, right, is fully aligned with the year 2729 BCE of the first Egyptian king, which we came up with, as far as the date goes, quite recently, in the recent paragraphs, but also we wrote about it in chapter 3. as the, you know, the end of the Tower of Babel, and that was the beginning of Egyptian history right after the Tower of Babel. I remember very well the beginning of my research into the Green Family. This is the most interesting thing here. The beginning of my research into the Green Family, this is the part that interests me the most about this paragraph and how everything changed the day I entered into the Google search engine. Quote, Hermes and Hermes, end quote. Hermes and Hermes, A-R-M-A-I-S and H-E-R-M-E-S, that caused me to find Mr. Crosthwaite's book from 1839 called Synchronology. And from that point onward, it was remarkable. He was the only one who talked about Hermes and Hermes, apparently. One of the very few results that comes up if you search for Hermes and Hermes. He knew about this, the identification of Hermes with Hermes. For some reason, I got interested in Hermes in the research of the Green Family. I'm not exactly sure how I got interested in that, but I did. When I did that search, the immediate result of that search was to find this book. And that was a phenomenal book. It just changed everything about my understanding of Herodotus and how, when the first coins were produced, which was explained by Mr. Crosthwaite, all the things about the generation of the firstborn son, all of that stuff, the recursive mathematics that's used by bankers to determine how much you should get for, you know, by knowing how long a person lives, they can determine how long a life annuity is, for example, or how much they're going to pay you, because they think they know how long you're going to live. So they'll pay you a certain amount per month for a life annuity that will go on as long as you live. But they have an understanding about how long they think you're going to live because they use reversionary calculations, right? That's what it's called by Mr. Crosthwaite. And so my search began for the history of the world, what I call the genealogy, because it was begun by my family research, which knew now, in other words, returns to a start. I could have written, which now returns to a start. For what began with Thoth or Hermes has returned there now to Thoth, that is, in our current paragraph, who's also called Hermes, after many dreams have come true by the grace of Jehovah. The chronology from Adam, having been greatly or modestly elucidated from his beginning in 5550 BCE in genealogy. On this subject, please see the article Green, G-R-E-E-N, and it was called, what was it called? Let me look that up, see if I can find it. Where is it? Green. The Writ of History, it's called, yeah. Green, The Writ of History. Yeah, that's it would be easier to find if, or Rolf Ward Green, I guess if you search for Rolf Ward Green, and the article called Green, G-R-E-E-N, or The Writ of History, W-R-I-T, Writ, that might help you find it also. Of the year 2729 BCE, when we add back the 43 years of the construction on the Tower of Babel, we come to 2772 BCE. Also, you see that in paragraph 310. Or some 2 years, that is, after the eclipse of Nimrod, 2772 BCE, being 160 years after the death of Noah, as found in paragraph 310 above for the start of the tower, 2772 being the approximate date for the start of the Tower of Babel, right? And we thought, well, the dispersion was actually sometimes considered as actually also 2745 or even 2737. If that were the dispersion, you had 43 years to 2737. How much time we got? We got some time. 27:37, which is sort of the beginning of Shinong's reign, right? When he, or maybe that's when he battled Nimrod, and that's why he became some important person by defeating Nimrod at that time. 27:37, if we add 42, what do we get? Or 43, yeah, let's add 43, because you know what it leads to? 27:80, which is the death of Shem. That's exactly the death of Shem in our very carefully calculated chronology, using the births of each patriarch, you know, each generation, as recorded in the Bible, gives us these death dates for the patriarchs, knowing how long they lived and when they were born. So that's the death of Shem, 2780. So that would be a very reasonable guess for the start of the Tower of Babel also, for the 43 years, right? Or we sometimes say 2745, right, for the dispersion, but they gradually left off building the tower, you see. So we also know that the rule of Menes is sometimes given as 35 years. He was the first king of either Egypt or Shinar, or, you know, the first king of the first dynasty of Egypt in Manetho. Sometimes given as 35 years, and when you add 35 to 2745, once again, you get 2780, the death of Shem. So these are interesting, important correlations of things we should be interested in resolving. Have we got this? Yeah, it never comes to the right page without me going and finding it. I have to go down and find the Egyptian dynasties here every time. Have to do it manually. So here's Dynasty 1. Well, in Eusebius, he's given 30 years. So it's some other place where he's got 35. 62 by Africanus. So I'm thinking it's probably in the Book of Sothis where he gets 35. That's what I think now. Where we got? What's that? Pseudo-Manetho. There's the Book of Sothis. That was quick. I found it quickly. Not always that easy to find. Okay. Let's go back to the beginning. Jehovah willing. Here we are. There's the beginning. 35 years, Menes. See that? In the Book of Sothis. Yeah, so that's where the 35 sometimes can be gotten from. But then Kurodes is given 63 years. He seems like he correlates well with 62 years of Menes given by Africanus. So you see there's a lot of conflating going on and misidentification, but, you know, combining more than one person under the same name, which would be called conflating, right? Or under the same set of achievements to consider one person as having done a certain number of things which are actually done by different people, that would be a conflation by trying to attribute them all to one person. So there seems to be some work that we could still do on this, obviously. Oops, I've gone over time. Okay. So that's it for today. It's so enjoyable. I don't mind, you know, at all reviewing it, because there's new discoveries that can be made in this all the time, every single time you look at it. It's October 26th. Today, 2024 of the Common Era, and the time is 2034 hours. All of my date stamps are done the same day. There's none of this baloney, complete garbage, lying, telling lies like they do on the YouTube and on the internet all the time, lying about what date something was released when it was released long before that. These videos are done this day. The article was from 2010. It's the Ark of Urartu. We were studying chapter 5, paragraph 6 today. Thank you so much for listening and watching. I'm Ward Green. The time is 2035 hours North American Eastern Daylight Time. The date, October 26th, as I mentioned, 20, 2024, that is, of the Common Era. And this is on my behalf. I love you very much. And this is Liv Dusty, and this is Cassie. Saying bye for now. I love you very much.